So now that you have a pretty good understanding of how to do a functional physical exam, we're going to move into how to look at your client's bodily functions and evaluate that. It's part of the physical exam. It's not something that you are physically going to be looking at, but it's something that they are going to be tracking and sending back to you. So I include it with the physical exam findings area. Now, know that it's going to take some time and practice to get this wired and get this under your belt. And I recommend that you just go through the videos, go through them a couple of times, go through the forums, and find some friends, family members, clients that you can practice on. And that's the way you're going to get better at this. And whether that means actually doing the physical exam or guiding them to do the physical exam and report their findings back, it's still all the same. There's a lot of great information that you could glean from this. So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols. So let's move into bodily function evaluation. We've got two files for you. One's a PDF and one is an online form. We'll go through the PDF file in more detail, and then I'll just show you on the online form how it's pretty much the same, and you have the option of using whichever one you prefer. Personally, I just really like using the online forms because it doesn't require anyone to print out a PDF, fill it in with their penmanship, and then send it back to me, and then I have to figure out how to get it. It's usually faxed or mailed or whatever. It's so much easier if they just fill it online. It immediately comes to me, and we get an immediate ability to interpret. So we're going to ask your client to take a look and observe over a several day period the color and the consistency of their mucus, and give us feedback about what the mucus is like most of the time. If it varies a lot, they can use the little space below to say that, well, it's white about 50% of the time, it's light yellow 25%, and it's green 25%, or something along those lines, just to give you a little bit of an understanding of what kind of ranges they're going through. And again, we'll go through each of those and what they mean in just a few minutes. And then the consistency. Is it thin and watery? It just flows? Is it thick and sticky? Is it ropey, like really thin, long strands? So let's take a look at what it means as you're interpreting. If they've got clear mucus, it usually means there's some sort of an allergic reaction going on if it's profuse. If it's just a little bit of mucus, we all have a little bit of mucus happening, that could be perfectly normal, perfectly healthy. But if there's an allergy, it's going to be kind of profuse and regular and a lot, but clear. And that also can indicate that there's some coolness inside and some dampness inside. If the mucus is white, that's also a healthy state of the mucus. But again, if it's excessive in volume, white mucus can indicate coldness inside in Chinese medicine terms, or excess yin in Chinese medicine terms, or in our terms, more allergy type symptoms. When we start to get into more colored mucus is where we're looking for signs of immune impairment and also infection. So a light yellow mucus would generally be what the mucus would look like at either the beginning or the tail end of some sort of an upper respiratory type viral infection, a low-grade infection, but it's more at the beginning and the end. When it gets to be dark yellow, we're in the active state of infection, and usually it's a bacterial or a lower respiratory system, so say in the bronchioles or in the lungs. A brown mucus is usually associated with some sort of other foreign matter mixed in with the mucus to make it look darker, dirt or dust. And that's seen in people who had smoked or people who work in an environment where they're exposed to lots of things in the air. Green mucus is almost always associated with a bacterial infection. When it's green, there's almost always a bacterial infection. And not to be confused with the very beginning of mucus, if you have an allergy and your nose drips a lot at night, that very beginning part, right, crusted around your nose, can be green. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have an infection inside of you, but that while it was sitting there at the surface, some bacteria started to grow. So if it's mostly white or clear, but just a little bit green at the beginning of the day, that's not to be as concerning as if the mucus is green throughout the day. So if you're dripping from your nose, clearing your throat, or coughing it up from your bronchioles or your lungs. When the mucus is pinkish or red, there's usually some blood mixed in there, and that can be a sign of a lung infection or a bronchial infection. Now, of course, it could be an esophageal problem. It could be an irritation in the esophagus that's bleeding and mixing with the mucus as it's coming up. But most likely, it's something that there's some bleeding going on in the upper respiratory tract. And that's a sign that this person needs some other intervention. If you feel comfortable dealing with bacterial infections, if it's within your scope of practice and your comfort level, there's lots of herbal things that you can do. But you want to be clear that you tell this person that there is an infection most likely going on and there's some bleeding going on, and that it is something that needs to be looked at and taken more seriously. When the mucus is thin or profuse, it's usually an allergy. When it's thick, it's usually an infection in the upper respiratory tract. And again, it all varies based on the color as well. So you're looking at the consistency and the color. When the mucus gets really long and stringy and ropey, it's usually a sign of a serious infection in the lung. And make sure that that person is aware that this is what's going on and don't try to treat it on your own. So let's take a look at urine. You want to have your person, your client, just observe their urine. How many times a day do they urinate? Are they in the bathroom every hour? Are they in there once or twice? So from the too little to too much extreme. So you want to look at the volume, the color, the clarity, whether it's clear or cloudy, the odor. What does the odor smell like? And ideally, if you can get them to take their pH, that would be awesome as well. So in terms of volume, it could be scant, meaning they're very infrequently going to the bathroom, and when they do, there's very small amount of urine. And that's often happening in this case of dehydration. That also can happen in the case of a urinary tract infection, where you feel like there's a lot of pressure, but there's not a lot of urine in there. And it also can be a sign in men of some sort of prostate involvement, pressure from the prostate onto the bladder. A low volume, a medium volume, and a high volume. It's kind of subjective. There's no real absolutes because it depends on the size of the person. But if a person is, say they were to collect their 24-hour urine and they are a, say, average 150-pound male, then if they were to have more than a quart and a half to 2 quarts of urine in that period, that's probably a high volume. Whereas they were to have less than a quart of urine, that's pretty light, okay? So you just kind of ask them to gauge and they can say how many times they're going. As far as the color, it can be really clear. And when somebody's drinking a lot of water, and they're drinking, I think, the ideal amount of water throughout the day, all but the first morning urine really should be clear. And if there's any discoloration from it, other than that related to B vitamins, then they ought to be upping their water intake. I always tell people, if your urine is not clear throughout the day, then you need to be drinking more water. And I don't care what the measurements say or the charts say or the formula says according to your weight. If your urine is yellow, it means that there's concentration of toxins in there and you are not drinking enough water to diffuse those. So you want it to be clear throughout, or in the morning, straw to amber. So it's a very light, pale yellow. When it starts to get into dark yellow, we're looking at very low volume. We're looking at too much concentration, not enough fluid for the concentration of toxins, and you want to bring that up. And orange can either be a medication, a B vitamin, or spleen distress or pancreas distress or some sort of problematic thing. When it gets to be dark brown, then we know that there's a problem. It can be hepatitis. A lot of times with hepatitis, the urine will be dark brown. And red is usually some sort of blood. So it could be a kidney stone, a bladder infection, something along those lines. So anything from orange to red, orange, brown, or red are things to be concerned about because they may be more than just a functional problem. There may be actually a tissue change pathology that needs to be dealt with. From clear to straw to amber to dark yellow, if you want to get it more towards the clear, it's usually a matter of drinking more and, of course, living with less toxins, eating less toxins, drinking less toxins. As far as clarity, it should be clear. When it starts to get into cloudy, very cloudy, milky, or mucousy, we know that there's a problem going on. When it's cloudy or milky, there's usually either an infection going on or there's excess protein or sediment in the urine. So that's something to watch for. When it gets milky, then we're looking at even more serious infection. And then when you see mucus or mucus strands in the urine, then for sure there's an infection going on. And having the person checked with the little dipsticks, there's usually 8 different measurements on there. You can check for protein, nitrates, leukocytes, glucose, or urobilinogen, pH. So you're testing a wide range of urinary excretions to see if there's a problem going on. And when there's high protein in the urine, if there's blood in the urine, if there's leukocytes in the urine, then that would give an indication of either an infection or a stone going on. If the odor tends towards sweet, it usually means that there's too much sugar in the urine, and that's an indication of a diabetic type condition or a tendency towards diabetes. If it's a foul odor, there's usually an infection going on. And if it smells like ammonia, there's kidney stress. It's a very acid type of a urine situation, but your body is buffering it with ammonia. And if you took the pH, it probably would blow the chart out on the alkaline side because ammonia is very alkalizing. But what it really means is that your system is very acidic and your body's going the other direction to try to alkalize it. Okay, so those are the things that you do for the urine. So now let's take a look at everybody's favorite observation is the stool observation. A lot of people will balk when you say, hey, I would like you to just watch your poop and keep a poop diary for the next few days. They kind of look at you like you're odd. But when they do it, they have a lot of revelations that happen. So what we're looking for is the frequency, less than once a day, all the way up to more than 3 times a day. In my book, definitely once a day or less is towards constipation. More than 3 times a day is you're looking at too frequently and more towards the diarrhea. Really 2 to 3 times a day is where it should be, unless you're eating very little. If you're on a cleanse or a fast where you're eating very little, then you're not going to have as frequent or as large a volume. When you look at the length, well, you can have stools that aren't formed, in which case you can't tell what the length is. And then you have really small stools, which are less than 4 inches, and large stools, which are greater than 12 inches. Most people don't have stools that are greater than 12 inches. Those are really healthy, bulky stools. Also, you want to look at the width. If they don't have form, they don't have form. But those really pencil-thin stools indicate that things are going through too rapidly or you've got a peristalsis problem in the small intestine. You can also go to 1 to 2 inches, 2 to 3 inches, or greater than 3 finger widths. Not inches, but finger widths apart. So those nice big 3 finger widths or more stools are what you're shooting for. 12 inches, 3 finger widths wide, really nice, healthy, bulky stool that passes really easily and keeps its shape when it hits the water. It may fall apart after a little bit, but if it holds its shape somewhat, that's a healthier stool, well-formed and soft. Well-formed and hard and pellets are not desirable. right? So when it's well formed, but it's hard, oftentimes if you look closely at it, it's really a lot of little pellets that are formed together. And then pellets for sure are dehydration in the colon and sluggish bowel. If that person were to do a transit time test, which is we'll go through in the digestive module, but that's where you kind of track how long it takes food to go from mouth to anus, then you'd usually see that in people with the pellets, it's taking more than 24 hours for food to make its way through the system. And in doing so, the liquid is getting reabsorbed. The odor, people say, of course my stool stinks. You really should have none to a, you know, really none is good. Pleasant can often mean that there is some undigested sugars and things like that. But, you know, none to pleasant would be what you're charting for. Unpleasant, foul, and runaway quick would be the other classifications. And the worse smelling it is, the more it indicates a toxic bowel. Color. When it's light or clay colored, that's usually insufficient bile. If it's green, it can be unconjugated bile, but also folks that drink a lot of green smoothies. If you're on a green smoothie cleanse and all you're doing is drinking green smoothies, your stool is going to be green because of the massive amounts of green fiber in there. But a medium brown is usually the normal. Dark brown can indicate that you just don't have enough vegetable fiber in your diet. And black can indicate blood, in dried blood as it goes through the system. So if you've got a black stool, a person with a black stool, you want them to get what's called a guaiac test, which is a stool test that tests for the presence of blood. Black stool can indicate blood that's happened further up in the digestive tract, like a bleeding ulcer or esophagitis that's leaking down into the stomach and through the system. By the time it makes its way out, it turns the stool black. If the stool is red, and if it's coated with red, or if you see red, they see red on the toilet paper when they wipe, that's an indication that there's something bleeding low down. Oftentimes it's a hemorrhoid or a fissure at the opening. Sometimes when people have big stools that are hard and they pass them, it causes a split in the opening called a fissure, and that can bleed when there's a large stool. And then with fiber, you want to have, does your stool sink or float? Floating is normal. When you have a fair amount of fiber in your stool, it will float. Well, when you sink, it's an insufficient amount of fiber. So let's quickly go through some of the other indications. We've covered most of these, but we'll just go through them and make sure that you're really clear as you understand your client's poop diary. If the stools are greasy or shiny, it indicates that there's poor fat digestion, and that can be a sign of an impaired liver. It can be a sign of insufficient digestive enzymes, and it could be a sign of insufficient bile. And so you're going to need to look at supporting this person with digestive enzymes and liver support. Foul-smelling stools are a sign of stagnation in your large intestine. Things have been sitting there and they've been putrefying, and bacteria have been acting on them and breaking them apart, so they stink. They're not supposed to stink. So addressing this with digestive enzymes and probiotics and working on alkalinizing your system, de-stressing your system, and even doing colonics and enemas to just get rid of the extra waste. When you have skidders, these leave skid marks in the bowl. They don't just float to the bottom and then go down. They leave skid marks. Usually it's an excess of mucus, and that can be a result of an allergy, say to dairy or wheat or other mucus-producing foods or allergens, things that people are allergic to. Again, as I mentioned earlier, pellets are a sign of dehydration, low fiber intake, or sluggish liver. When your liver is sluggish and you're not producing enough bile, there's an excess of fat in the stool, so makes it go through more slowly, and voila. Lumpy is similar to pellets, but these are where the pellets are stuck together to make one big clump. So it may look like a full-blown, long cylindrical stool or sausage-like shape. But in fact, it's a lot of little pellets that are clumped together and has the same indications: dehydration, low fiber intake, or a sluggish liver. whenever the stool is pale, when they say my stools kind of look like sand, sandy or clay colored, that's an indication of low bile production. And that's where you need to be supporting that liver. When you've got visible food particles in the stool, that means they're not chewing enough, they're eating too fast, and they may not have enough digestive enzymes. You really need to be having people make sure they chew their food. So by the time you swallow your meal, that food should be the same consistency as if you'd thrown it in the blender, or pretty darn close. When the stools are pencil thin, it could be that your large intestine is clogged and the opening, the lumen, is very narrow. But if you alternate between pencil thin and larger, oftentimes it's more an indication of things passing through pretty quickly from the small intestine. But either way, pencil thin stools are not normal. Watery stools can indicate an irritated colon, a too rapid a transit time that things are just flying through, or exposure to bacterial organisms or virus, that whole stomach virus type of thing, or candida, or some sort of organism that's causing things to irritate the lining, toxic exposure to the lining, and it causes the peristalsis to increase and go too fast, and not you don't get a chance to absorb the excess water. When you have a lot of small curved pieces, that's also an indication of faster than usual transit time. They still have the shape of the small intestine because they haven't been in the large intestine long enough to become drier and take on the larger dimension. Loose stools, diarrhea, is oftentimes weakness in the small intestine or spleen. It could also indicate an irritated ileocecal valve that's stuck in the open position. It can also indicate exposure to some sort of pathogen or toxin that's irritating the lining of your gut. Finally, mucus. Mucus is usually associated with food allergy or infection, especially candida infections can tend to produce mucus stools. And also colitis, inflammation of the colon, can produce mucus. Diverticulitis, Crohn's disease, mucus colitis, ulcerative colitis, all of these things can produce mucus in the stool. So you want to be asking a lot of questions once you see what the stool results come out to be. So now that we've finished our bodily function evaluation going through the PDF file, I'd like to take a quick look at the online form. And again, you have the choice of how you want to do this, but I just want to show you what your options are. So that's it. And our next video will be this one, the functional exam interpretation. Be back in a few.